Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in just north of New York City. Today, I'll be talking with Oakland shortstop Marcus Semien, mining him for stories about Ricky Henderson, Hall of Fame caliber coach Ron Washington, and the greatest throw any of us have ever seen. But first, some news and notes. Union Chief Tony Clark told our colleague Marley Rivera, despite all that has been floated and all the rhetoric that is out there, we've not received anything formal, the details and actual plan. Of course, he's referring to the Player Association. And he continued to say, to Carlos Correa's point, unless or until we see and receive an actual proposal with a plan or plans, because my guess is there's going to need to be flexibility in whatever is going to be considered. It's all assumption. It lends itself to the uncertainty because there are a lot of ideations, but not any substance behind them just yet. So just keep that in mind as we go forward. There are no definitive plans, despite things that are being leaked out there. You know what? Today, we had baseball, the opener for KBO, the Korean Baseball League, and it was on ESPN. Cheerleaders danced beneath rows of empty seats, and umpires wore protective masks as the new KBO organization season began. Here was Carl Ravitch calling a home run without crowds.
Ha-Sung Bum thought perhaps he had one. It's down the line, and it drifts foul. Didn't see the bat flip there, though, my friend. Yes, we did have a home run. That is a home run. Nobody seemed to react at all. There obviously is no crowd, but the right fielder didn't react, and finally Bum runs around the bases. Home run for Na-Sung Bum. First of the year, first of the game.
Obviously, Carl doing that broadcast remotely from his home. And yeah, when you see the ball hit up in the air, it looks like it's going to go foul. And normally, if there were fans there, they'd be waving one way or the other. But it wasn't until the batter dropped his bat and began to go around the bases that we got that call. The NC Dinos defeated the Samsung Lions 4-0. That game started at 1 a.m. Eastern time. Moving forward, a lot of the games will be at 5:30 a.m. Eastern time. But as we're going to be learning from Rick Mace coming on, the KBO games will re-air each day at 2 or 3 in the afternoon on ESPN2. Something to look forward to. All right, let's get to Rick Mace. Rick Mace is ESPN's Senior Manager of Programming and Acquisition. He's the guy who arranges ESPN's baseball schedule. And he's driving force behind the live baseball broadcast on ESPN of the Korean baseball organization, KBO, which started at 1 a.m. last night. And Rick, we'll start with this. I know last night's game was at 1 a.m., but moving forward, the games, generally speaking, are going to be at 5:30 a.m. Thank you for tailoring our schedule around my life schedule, getting up early in the morning.
I'm glad somebody's happy about the times that these games are on.
So tell me how this came about.
So I'm happy to walk you through it. Very, very excited about it. And I take it as a huge compliment, by the way, that you said the driving force there. But I have to give credit. This has been a gigantic team effort to get this done. I'm simply the person that woke up every morning and had calls with Korea for the past few weeks. But trust me, gigantic effort to get this done. I can't take all the credit. But to tell you how we got here, as you know, I usually manage our Major League Baseball schedule for programming. And with the games not being played, we as a company really started to look for anything that we could find that would be interesting to fill the void until the major leaguers come back. So we explored options all over the world, started researching. I've learned a lot more about baseball around the world and various leagues. Been on the calls with Taiwan, Korea, the Japanese league. And really, KBO seemed like it was the ideal opportunity. The league season, you know, started up last night, and it's a very high-quality league. And start time to start games synced up with our schedule. We were able to reach out and come to an agreement that we had ongoing conversations over the last 3 weeks to see if we could make a deal that made sense for both Korea and KBO and ESPN. And I think it fits for both of us. We're very excited about it. And I've had them say, honestly, we're blown away. We never thought KBO would be on ESPN in America, but they're just as excited as we are to have it.
So, Rick, as you were looking into the KBO, I'm curious about what you learned about the KBO. I was going through the same process when I started to get wind of this a couple weeks ago.
Well, first thing I learned is that Major League Baseball absolutely needs to loosen up their bat flip rules because these things are awesome. honestly, my son and I are absolutely obsessed with watching the bat flip videos. In all seriousness, no, I've learned as much from our guys as I have just my independent research on ESPN.com about this. It's a 10-team league. It's really interesting. The players that have come out of there and landed in MLB, the MLB players that have gone over there. I haven't heard the name Casey Kelly in years. As a Red Sox fan, he was one of our up-and-coming prospects. And now he's pitching for the LG Twins, and I get to watch him. So I've learned a lot about how the baseball works in Korea and just how it's how the fans react to the games and differently here than with MLB. It's really an exciting league.
100%. Eric Thames played over there. He, of course, now with the Washington Nationals, I agree with you, you know, and in terms of what I learned, you sent me a pre-show note, you know, asking this sort of the question about, you know, which would become the team that you would adopt. And I was a little upset because you adopted the team that I wanted to adopt.
The NC Dinos?
That's who I was going to pick. And I was like, come on, when you said that was the team that you're focused on.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm really throwing a dart blind here. Did watch the Dino, had the Dinos on last night, and I could tell you I picked them because it seems like they hit a lot of home runs, which should be fun. And their logo on their website right now is actually a dinosaur wearing a face mask at it right now. That put me over the top. I had to jump on. My son is trying to convince me to switch to the LG Twins right now, because they've been compared to the Red Sox of Korea. So we'll give the Twins game a chance tonight and lock into one.
Yeah, for me, I've decided because you took the Dinos, I got the Hanwha Eagles, lovable losers of the league. They made the playoffs once in the last 12 years. I also, when I was looking at the team names, I didn't know what a Wyvern was, the SK Wyverns. You know what? I'm curious, did you see what that is? That surprised me.
I did. I was in the exact same position and I looked it up and apparently it is a dragon.
Right. Exactly. Perfect for kids.
If kids can't jump on board with the Dinos and the Dragons, I don't know what'll work. This is good. Yeah. This is fun.
Yeah. So I will be a loyal watcher. Believe me, every morning when I get up and make my coffee and get ready for KBO. You also have had a big hand in arranging these broadcasts on Tuesday of historic games from the past. And tonight is one of your favorites.
You keep me up for that one because you're absolutely right. This is one of my favorite games of all time. I know, Buster, you helped me out in the beginning as we were talking about what games would come up. But when the season wasn't going to start, MLB was incredibly helpful in working with us to put together a series of classic games. We call them the MLB Encore games every Tuesday. And really wanted to bring back some of the best games in baseball history, some of the most feel-good moments out there that we could think of, because I feel like people need to see that right now. We started out with Mike Piazza and his post-9/11 home run, Cal Ripken breaking the record, Griffey scoring from first, and then now tonight, I'm very pleased we finally got up to the 2004 ALCS Game 4 Dave Roberts Seal Poppy walk-off home run, one of my favorite moments of all time as a sports fan. So there, I couldn't be more excited to watch it tonight.
And it was one of my favorite podcast interviews to do last month when we had Dave Roberts on talking about his steal in that game and all the elements that went into it, the fact that the first time he pinch ran in the playoffs, he didn't run and he made up his mind, okay, next time that I get on, I'm definitely going to run. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to run. What he didn't know, of course, is that it was in a pivotal situation with the greatest closer in baseball history on the mound, Mariano Rivera. And that stolen base, of course, became a crossroad moment for your Red Sox.
Absolutely.
So we had a story posted on ESPN.com yesterday. We talked about in the podcast yesterday Currently, there is a vote on which game to pick in relation to Derek Jeter's career. The five choices: Jeffrey Mayer game from 1996 playoffs, Mr. November from the 2001 World Series, the dive into the stands back from 2004, hit number 3,000, that, of course, off David Price amidst a five-hit game, or his last home game at Yankee Stadium. I know you're going to defer to the fans' choice, but if you were to have a vote, even as a Red Sox fan, which would you pick?
Well, this is going exactly the opposite way. This one's a little painful for me as a Red Sox fan. But I think the game that I would pick here is the dive.
Really?
I'll tell you the reason. I was actually at that game with my wife long before I worked at ESPN, before we were married. And we were just regular. I was sitting in the stands wearing a Nomar Garcia Parra jersey watching that moment happen. The game ended, and I swore I would never go back to Yankee Stadium again as a Red Sox fan. I'll tell you, my sister actually graduated from NYU, had her graduation at Yankee Stadium, and I did not go. I met them afterwards to keep my vow. It wasn't until I took my job now that I had to start going to games for work that I actually broke it and went back to Yankee Stadium. So I'll relive that one tonight, or
man,
next week if I had a vote.
Well, obviously you don't feel the same way a lot of Red Sox fans do. They responded when I posted this list yesterday. Yeah, that wasn't that great of a catch. He ran eight steps after he caught the ball, and he didn't have to dive. It was a big show. And besides, Pokey Reese made an identical play earlier in the game. Obviously, you're not feeling that way.
No, I'll tell you what, I completely agree. I've long contested Jeter could have stopped, but we'll let him have his moment and enjoy it, and let the Yankee fans enjoy it next week if they pick that one.
All right. I feel stupid asking this question because it's the question that anytime you talk to anybody in baseball, what's going to happen? The bottom line is they don't know. The way I've described it is baseball right now is like a rowboat in a hurricane. There's so many forces beyond their control. But generally speaking, you know, where does ESPN stand in its conversations with Major League Baseball about a broadcast schedule?
I want baseball back and MLB back as much as anybody. I completely miss it. And I talk to the league almost every day, their broadcasting office. And I know they're working really hard to come up with a plan. I've seen a lot of things reported, and you and I have spoken about it. The most that I know right now is that MLB is coming up with several plans, and they have been for weeks. And when the situation allows them to put one of them in action, they're going to. I'm in wait-and-see mode, and I think they're in wait-and-see mode to decide which one of these plans they can go. They want to be back just as much as we want to have them back. I can tell you, ESPN is the traditional home of MLB opening day. So as soon as they have a plan to come back, we'll be right there and bringing it back in whatever form it is.
And I was talking with a longtime agent last night about the current situation. He goes, every day you have contingency plans. You have conversations about possible contingency plans. And he said, and then the context changes. And then the next day, and then you start working through a whole new set of things. I'm guessing that in your position, it's very similar.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, through all this time, I keep trying to say, keep things in perspective and say there's worse problems in the world right now than no baseball. I can't believe I actually say that out loud, knowing how passionate I am and everyone is about baseball. But that's the reality. And it is. It's coming up with contingency plans and sticking, really not speculating on the rumors and just trying to go down the road of here are the facts. Here's what we can do. And every time a situation changes, the CDC says something differently, the curve changes, you got to be ready to react. I never thought we'd be doing Korean baseball here, but look where we are. We've got six games on every week. So we're making it up on the fly.
A last one for you. In our week of exhibition games that we had in early March, we had so many players mic'd up, and it was such a positive response to that. Look, I mean, ultimately, the decision about whether to do things like that going forward comes down to Major League Baseball and the Players Association. Just as a fan, how did you like that week?
I thought it was one of the coolest weeks that I've been associated with Major League Baseball here at ESPN.
the second that I heard, and I believe it seems so long ago now, but when Chris, I think it was Chris Bryan in the box, and he was standing there mic'd up, and as the pitch is coming in, he goes, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." I thought it was hilarious. I couldn't stop laughing, and I knew we had something great. That whole week, just every day, there were great moments that came out of it. I would absolutely, that's my favorite, by the way, but I would absolutely love to do more of this. It seems like the fans responded. Major League Baseball very much took notice of that. Lots of things to work out with MLB and the players' unions and things to sort out who can wear mics when, but I think everyone is open to exploring more opportunities like that. It was just too much fun.
It was a lot of fun, and I had one baseball official say that when baseball comes back, it's going to be a chance for it to rebrand itself. My 15-year-old son said to me after watching that Freddie Freeman replay, and of course he's a Braves fan, he said, if they did that all the time, he said, I would watch. And yes.
Freddie Freeman, I completely forgot that we've got wind, as he circled second base. It was an amazing moment.
All right, Rick, I appreciate it.
Well, hey, thank you very much for having me.
Before we get to Marcus Semien, today on ESPN Daily, Korean baseball has begun, and it's one of the only leagues playing anywhere. If you watch the games on ESPN, you might see a player do a bat flip when you least expect it. Hear why bat flips are big in Korea. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Marcus Semien is the shortstop for the Oakland Athletics. Last year, he finished third in the voting for the American League MVP after hitting 43 doubles, 7 triples, 33 homers, scoring 123 runs. And Marcus, I would ask you what you're doing, but in preparing for this, you got one of your boys is, what, 3, and the other one is almost 2, so I know what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm throwing BP right now. That's what we just got done doing. My 3-year-old loves to hit, and we've just been, you know, that's what we do when we go outside during this crazy time. We play a little baseball, and it's fun watching him play. It's his season now.
Well, and they're small enough where they're not completely stir crazy either. I kind of feel for the players who have kids who are like 8, 9, 10 years old, because those would be the ones who would be going nuts being inside.
Yeah, I mean, our 3-year-old was in preschool, and we were looking forward to getting back from spring training, putting him back in, and he's got all his little friends, but that I'm sure he misses that. But the silver lining is that I get to be home a lot more, and you know, usually during the season I leave the house around, you know, noon or 12:30 for a night game, and then game's over and they might be asleep. So it's nice to spend as much time, you know, right now as we can, and we'll see what happens with this season, but I'm just trying to be optimistic.
Last weekend, you and your wife, Tara Murray, donated meals. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we knew we wanted to help our community. Both of us grew up here in the East Bay in Northern California, and we hit up the A's and asked them, you know, who are people that we can thank during this time first, and they gave us some good ideas, you know, AC Transit, which is the bus system here in the East Bay or in Alameda County, and, you know, BART, which is the train service we have here. Those workers are all, you know, still working, putting their lives on the line to get, you know, people to and from work, whoever does have to go into work. So we use some local restaurants in Oakland to, you know, provide them some meals, and for that we could help those local restaurants stay afloat too. Some of these restaurants are struggling really bad, so we did that. And then we went through Coaching Corps, which is a nonprofit organization here, and donated some funds to feed kids and feed people who are in need, who can't afford to, you know, eat, whether they've got their parents got laid off or whatever. It's a tough time for a lot of people, so we just tried to help our community as best we could.
What were some of the things that jumped out at you as you guys were doing that?
Well, I mean, we're all in, you know, a lot of us are all in tough situations right now. Whether you can't go to work, you have family who's actually sick with the virus, or you just, you know, you can't earn your paycheck, but you still have bills. That's the main one I've seen around here. The cost of living is so expensive here in the Bay Area, yet, and jobs are just
know, jobs are going down. My sister got laid off. You know, a lot of people are struggling to get work right now. And you know, like I said, the bills keep coming, and you want to be able to help people stay afloat during this time.
When you did that, did you bump into some A's fans?
You know, we definitely received some emails, some thank yous, and, you know, this is A's country where we live, and, you know, that was enough for me, just getting reading those thank you letters from BART, from AC Transit, I forgot to mention, we helped out Alta Bates Hospital as well, provided some meals. That's the hospital our kids were born at, and we, you know, they said they've got some cases, coronavirus cases there, and we wanted to provide meals for the ER workers. So it's cool to see those pictures and, you know, read those emails.
All right. I appreciate you joining us for some storytelling and helping to distract us during this time. You've met a lot of interesting people in your time in baseball, and so I'm going to try to mine some of those stories. And you have to start with Ricky Henderson, because everybody seems to have a good Ricky Henderson story. What's it been like to get to know him a little bit?
Yeah, Ricky's been great. You know, as a Bay Area kid, we share that, you know, we share that bond of being able to play for our hometown. He obviously had a couple stints in Oakland. It always seemed like he'd come back home whenever he needed to. They'd re-sign him. But just, you know, picking his brain now as a leadoff hitter is what I've been doing now. Usually before the games, we sit down, play some cards together. Whenever he comes in the clubhouse, he's one of the guys. And I like to play cards before, just get my mind off of the game. It sounds funny, but get your mind off of the game before you go out there. So that's usually what we do. He's super competitive. You know, he picks, you know, the game comes a lot easier to him than it comes to me. So some of the stuff he says, you hear it, and then you go try it in the game and say, well, that doesn't work for me, but, you know, you're a Hall of Famer, I get it. It was a little easier for you, but he's got so much experience, and he does a great job with us. But the first time I got to Oakland, I think they had Ricky go out to first base for a base running station, and we all get out there, and probably about 20 to 25 position players in camp, and we're all standing out there, and it's Ricky's time to share with us how to steal a base. He's the best at it. He's the record holder. And we've got all types of people. We've got Billy Butler standing out there, myself, Coco, just all different types of players. And he's out there, and he tells us, all I did was get low and stay low and boom, and that's it. We said, so how is that going to help us? But that's what I mean when it was so easy for him. And he's like, hey, that's what I did, and that's how I stole all these bases. And what worked for him, you know, may not work for us, but it was just funny to see how easy the game was for him.
I remember Jay Bruce, who, of course, played with the Reds, was a teammate of Joey Votto, who's known, as you know, better than I would, among a lot of players, one of the smartest hitters in baseball. And Jay told me that when Joey, he would ask Joey a question, because Jay, like Joey, is a left-handed hitter. And at the end of it, he was like, yeah, I don't understand any of that. Like, it's all Greek to me. You mentioned about some of the things that you might pick Ricky's brain about being a leadoff hitter. What are some examples of that?
Well, what he shared with me was he used to just look in one zone, and no matter what pitch it was. So first pitch of the game, you know, a lot of time the leadoff hitter will just take it, just get the rhythm of the at-bat, let the hitter behind you, you know, have an easier at-bat so you see more pitches as the leadoff hitter. But I really, what I took from that is the first at-bat of the game is just as important as the second, third, fourth, or fifth. So as a leadoff guy, you don't want to just throw away that at-bat by giving the pitcher an easy strike, because in the long run, that all those outs you make, those are going to hurt your stats and hurt your team. So I tried a little bit, but for me it was hard. It was hard to live with myself if I made an out on the first pitch of the game. But there were certain times where I picked my spots and it kind of clicked, and he really helped me with that. But ultimately, it helped me walk more too, because I'm looking in one spot, and a lot of times that pitch isn't there. So I took that with me, and you know, I had a better year this year doing that.
Well, give me a scouting report on Ricky as a card player. And what's your guy's game of choice?
We got a couple games. Ricky's good. He's got great memory. You know, we play casino, which is like a one-on-one game. Most guys in pro ball have played that game. If you played minor league baseball, you've definitely played that game. Then we play Pluck, which is another popular one. That's a team game. So I played with Ricky. I played against him. I'm starting to get his tendencies after 5 years, but maybe it'll change this year when we get back.
You got to work early in your career with one of my favorite people in the baseball, Ron Washington. You know, longtime manager at Texas Rangers, also a longtime coach. And part of the reason why I always love talking with Wash is he is dead honest. Like some coaches or managers will tell you something in the back of your mind, you kind of got that wonder if they got that filter on. But Wash tells you exactly what he's thinking, and he worked with you. You know, day after day, as you developed your defensive skills at shortstop, tell me about what it was like to work with Ron Washington.
Yeah, Wash is one of the most unique coaches I've ever played for. He's one of the smartest guys. He's coached some great players. So, you know, not only was he a good coach before, you know, working with all these great players, but just him being able to pick those guys' brains. You talk about Tejada, Chavi, you know, then you talk about all the Rangers guys. So many good infielders he's worked with. So I was fortunate enough to have him turn my career around. Really, I was in a kind of a dark place my first year in Oakland where the errors were piling up. And you know, Billy Bean had a choice. He probably wanted to send me down or he could get Wash back into baseball and help me out too. So I'm glad he made that decision, but when they hired Wash to work with me, the night before, I think we were in Houston, and I think I made a couple errors, and you know, I read on the internet that the A's were hiring Ron Washington to work with the infielders, and I knew a lot of it was me. You know, I kind of that night I had a talk with a couple of our players. I remember Dan Otero and Stephen Vogt, you know, we were on the plane and they were kind of talking to me and trying to help me get through this mentally because they could see I was just grinding, struggling. And the next morning, got to the ballpark, Wash was there. We talked for about an hour and a half in the dugout and it was kind of just a heart-to-heart. And he could see the way I think and, you know, what I needed help with. And you know, from that day on, we worked every day at 2:30, if it was a night game or whatever. So he helped me out tremendously, and I'm thankful for him.
What if you can describe his energy level, because that's what jumps out at me. I remember watching him last summer, you know, watching him work with the Atlanta infielders, Ozzie Albies and Dansby Swanson and those guys. And he's going out every day, and he's attacking it. And from your perspective, how much did that help you? And do you remember a first time when he complimented you? Because as they say, he is dead honest. And if you get a compliment from him, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he's a confidence builder. So, you know, as a player, you always want to, you know, obviously you want to be coachable. You want to do what your coach is telling you to do because, you know, he's got a perspective that you don't have. As a player, you feel everything, but he's a set of eyes that can see it and make sure it looks right. And his favorite word was beautiful. If you did something that looked right in his eyes or that just looked a lot better, it was beautiful. All his players know that's what he says. And you also see him in the dugout. If you make a play, you check in the dugout, he's there. He's saluting you right away. I think he's got like a military background or in his family. And
yep.
Big salute guy. That's how the Chris Davis salute started with his home run trot around third base. So we give it right back to him on the field, and that's one of my best memories of Wash out there.
Now, you went to Cal Berkeley. Your wife went to Cal Berkeley. Your parents went to Cal Berkeley. I got a good idea where your kids might go someday. The story is that I read was that you basically grew up in the dorm when you were very little.
Yeah, wow, you're digging deep. Yeah, so My parents were young when they had me. My dad was a freshman on the Cal football team. My mom, also a freshman student. And, you know, she was staying in the dorms that I ended up living in as a freshman. So my mom was, you know, she was pregnant and in those dorms. So I actually was living in there twice. Pretty cool story, but it was unreal for my mom to help me, you know, move into those dorms, because she's like, this is unreal, because I lived literally in this building and now I'm helping you move in. So we've got a lot of good memories to share about, you know, all going to Cal. I'm the only one who doesn't have my degree yet out of all those people you listed, but you know, baseball didn't happen this year. I might enroll and try and do something about that.
Is that right? I mean, are you? How many hours do you have left there?
So I left as a junior, so I got a full year. I've got 30 units left, so I could chip away at it if this season doesn't start. But it's hard with them being on semesters. We usually finish our season in October, and it's too late by then. But that's something I definitely will finish before it's all said and done, just because I feel like I owe it to my parents and myself as well.
What was it like to be able to, when you, and I don't know when the moment that you knew you were going to Cal Berkeley was, but what was it like in that moment to share that with your parents whenever you were, whether it was offered a scholarship or you accepted or however that happened?
Yeah, I think so it was 2007, and we have the area code games, which is a big, you know, showcase for prep players. And I was fortunate enough to make the Northern California team. So I had a decent showing at the area code games, and a couple of offers came in like right after that week. And I've been waiting for Cal, you know, that's the school I already wanted to go to. So it came down to Cal and Long Beach State. And I made an unofficial visit to Cal because I lived 10 minutes from the campus. With Coach Zuber, who was the assistant at the time, John Zuber. And we hit it off, and he knew it was probably my first choice just with the history. And I'm really glad I made that choice. But we had a tough year, or a tough fall semester my junior year, because they tried to cut the baseball program. But it ended up being one of the most fun years I've had in my career and my life, because we went to the College World Series that year.
What was it like for you to face Garrett Cole in college and to see him progress as he has?
Yeah, so I remember my freshman year, we traveled to UCLA, and I didn't play a lot my freshman year. So I was sitting on the bench watching, and I remember our second baseman, Jeff Coburnus, who played for the Nationals for a little bit, he swung at a ball about a foot over his head at 98 miles an hour. I said, man, I'm going to just sit back and watch this. This is something. And then the next couple of years we faced him. I think we beat him the next 2 years, but it was always Bauer who gave us trouble. He beat us all 3 years.
And I'm guessing then, based on that early showing, you're probably not surprised how he's progressed as a pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, when Garrett was in Pittsburgh, I didn't face him at all. So it wasn't until he got to the Astros, faced him all the time, and seems like he kind of scrapped that two-seam fastball and went to that four-seamer, and it was sitting at 98, and he was painting the top. He was hitting the top of the zone for a strike, and all you can do is foul that pitch off or miss it anyway. So he's been locked in with that, and you know, I'm happy for him. He's doing a great job. You know, it's sad that he pitched so well and they came so close to World Series, but you feel like he's got a bunch of World Series already, but, you know, he's on a pretty good team in New York now.
What's the most amazing thing that the guy playing to your right in the infield has done that you remember, Matt Chapman?
You know, he's the best third baseman in the game. Probably he's the best defender in the game. But his leadership is the most impressive thing about him. He came in 2017 as a rookie and was a leader the moment he stepped in the clubhouse. pretty much turned our season around in 17. We were in dead last. We still finished in like fourth or fifth, but our record shot up once he got called up. And the next year we were a playoff team, and you know, without him we wouldn't be there. So he's a great leader and one of the most talented players I've ever seen.
What's the craziest play you've ever seen him make? And I know you probably get to see one every day, but there along the way he probably had a few that stood out to you.
Yeah, I actually pulled his YouTube up with my son, and we watched his highlights. And I think it was Yangervis Solarte, who he's robbed multiple times, but he was playing like shifted over. We shift Yangervis, but he was covering the bunt. But he made a play where it was like a ridiculous fadeaway throw, and he's made multiple plays like that. I can't remember the last time we've had a double down the line hit against us. It's just such a luxury to have, and he doesn't give up anything down the line or in the six hole, so it's pretty frustrating for opposing teams.
You were on the field August 11, 2018, for your teammate Ramon Laureano's throw against the Angels. I was watching that earlier today and watching what you were doing during that play. It looked like all of you were just sort of like staring and just standing in place watching that play develop. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, that was I think Ramon had got called up like the month before. I think he got called up in July or sometime around then, because that was in August. So all I remember was in spring training when we took infield outfield, because we just got this guy from Houston, basically gave us this guy. And we take infield outfield, and we had been struggling with our outfield arms for the past couple of years. So I saw him throw an absolute seed, and it like zipped right over my head in spring training. I said, wow, did anybody notice that? Because like nobody really reacted. And then he got hurt that spring. So he got hit by a pitch, broken hand. He got better, hit about 10 home runs in 2 weeks in AAA, and we called him up. And then I remember that play because Eric Young Jr. was the runner at first, and I'm pretty sure Upton hit the ball in the gap.
Yep.
And it, from my view, it looked like a sure double, and Young was going to score. But Laureano catches it on the run, and I'm the cutoff to throw it back to first. And that same thing happened. Ball went over my head, just like in spring training, except it was about 40 feet higher. And all I remember is Edwin Jackson's face when it happened, because he's a pitcher and he saved him a run and probably got him the win that day.
One of the most amazing plays you've ever seen. Last one for you. You know, a lot of times through the years covering baseball, I've talked to players who wind up with their hometown team, and they tell me privately, you know what, that wasn't necessarily the thing I wanted. I wasn't really thrilled about that. When you got traded to Oakland as someone who grew up in the East Bay, what was that moment like for you?
Yeah, that moment was, I found out on MLB Network first, like reading on the bottom line, because everything gets out before it even happens, seems like. So I knew that the Chicago White Sox, who I came up with, were looking for a right-handed pitcher because we had so many lefties. We had Danks. We had Rodon, Sale, Quintana, and they needed a righty. And I'm like, thinking about it, like one of us infielders here, we had a bunch of young infielders, one of us might get traded. And, you know, I didn't know if it would be me, but you know, the A's, Billy Bean called me, said, hey, I want you to play shortstop for the Oakland A's. I said, wow, because I hadn't been playing shortstop that much, you know, with Alexi Ramirez there in Chicago. So he obviously saw something in me, and took me a year or two to figure it out, playing shortstop. But I was in the Bay Area when I got that call, and it's been, you know, such a blessing for me and my family. You know, I got married, we have two kids now. My parents have been able to watch me play at the big league level, and it's been something a lot of these kids here in the East Bay dream of, and I got to do it, so it's been great.
And I was guessing you probably knew about Billy Beane's affinity for Cal Berkeley players.
Yeah, I mean, he's got not only Bob Melvin as a manager, but Mark Hanna's doing great for us. We had another guy named Michael Brady, who was a shortstop at Cal my freshman year, and he turned into a pitcher, and we had him for a while, too. So seems like they like the local guys. They've got a couple Stanford guys, and they had Jed and Piscotty, Sam Fold. So it's nice for the fans to see some local guys, I'm sure.
Exactly. All right, Marcus, I appreciate your time, and thanks for helping to distract us for a few minutes.
Okay, good talking to you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. Let's go down memory lane here. The year is 2001. We got two questions on it. Daryl writes in at Daryl V. Buster, hearing you discuss Ichiro prompts this. As a Mariners fan, I have always believed the 2001 team would have won it all, but for 9/11, which destroyed their momentum, distracted us all, and turned New York into a team of destiny. Do you agree with that?
Lou Piniella, I remember watching him at the end of that series, because you remember that the Yankees barely survived the Oakland Athletics, and then they faced the Mariners in the American League Championship Series. The Mariners team that won 116 games in the regular season, and the Yankees blew them out in five games. And I remember watching Lou Piniella in the corner of the Mariners dugout as the crowd serenaded him, chanting at the end of games. And he just had this smile on his face as a former member of the Yankees. And he said after the game, after the Mariners were eliminated, you know what, these people deserve this. I would agree that there began to be a connection there between the events that followed 9/11 and the Yankees advancing past the Mariners, and it did break the Mariners' momentum.
Eric Larson follows up on 2001 at Elar019. Hey, Buster, the 0-1 season had a lot going on. Bond 72, Mariners 116, Ichiro's rookie season, last seasons of Cal and Tony, A-Rod in Texas, 9/11, and the Great World Series. Can you think of any other seasons with so much going on?
No. And I totally agree with your read on that. A lot of people ask me, you know, what's the most exciting event that you've ever covered? And my answer is always, I wouldn't use the word exciting, but the most memorable event was the 2001 World Series. And of course, we hope that that is never repeated again because of the context and everything that happened before that.
Ryan Bauman at Baugh31 writes in, Buster, once their respective careers are finished, who had the better overall career, Albert Pujols or Miguel Cabrera?
Albert Pujols, I think. Yeah, I mean, his overall numbers are better now. You know, he certainly has had a long fade in the second half of his career in terms of his year-over-year production, but it does look like he's going to wind up with benchmarks that are going to be markedly higher than that of Miguel Cabrera. I was curious to see how Miggy would do at the outset of this year. And I think he turns 37, 38 this year, because when I saw him down at Lakeland, man, he was in phenomenal condition.
Last one up from I Still Miss Baseball at MattRat103. I think I speak for everyone. I say that we need a scoreboard style recap of some of the KBO action at the beginning of the podcast now, right? Maybe we can sneak it in during Bleacher Tweets. What do you think, Buster?
Occasionally. I don't want to break down every game, but I would like to hear from listeners of the podcast, right? Do they want daily highlights on the score on the top of the show? I don't think so. I don't think that'll be the sentiment, but I'm curious about what people think. So send us your Bleacher Tweets.
Sounds good. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for sending those in, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Marcus, to Rick, to Taylor Schwenk. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.